This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris with Sharad Kutan. Right now, early 6 o'clock this Thursday morning, the 5th of January. Good morning, Sharad Kutan.
Good morning, Melissa Idris. thank you so much for...
Using your full name?
Actually, it's not my full name, you know.
Yes, I know. So much more. Your full name...
I've been blessed with like...
it's a paragraph.
sort of. Yeah.
Okay, well, stay with us this morning. We're going to take you all the way till 10 o'clock. And some of the highlights of the show today include the Breakfast Grill at 8 o'clock, where I'll be speaking to Vunzi K, the general manager of Rev Asia Berhad, which was previously known as Catcha Media Berhad. So Rev Asia Berhad is technically the holding company of the digital media group Rev Asia Holdings, under which there are several really interesting brands. You may have heard of them. Says.com, Juice, Obulan, 8Share. Rev has also got a regional presence in Indonesia and the Philippines as well. So interesting time to talk about digital media, online media, especially as they've gone down the route of social news.
Oh.
Like BuzzFeed. So they're the Malaysian BuzzFeed, essentially.
Okay. So using social media platforms to disseminate news. And are they news? Do they gather news themselves? I mean, are they, in fact, is that original content from them?
A mix of both, so original, and they also rewrite headlines. But what they've done is found this winning formula, I'd like to call it, with Says.com. They've targeted... urban English-speaking millennials with Says, and they just grew exponentially. And when they discovered that that worked with Says.com, they said, okay, we're going to replicate it with Obulan. That's the Malaysian the Malay-speaking platform. And they said, okay, we're going to target the same Malay-speaking mass or urban millennials. And within a year, they saw 200% growth in revenue, and it was amazing that they had grown that fast, so exponentially.
That's right. So 2016 was a good year for Revit.
A good year, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I look forward to that interview.
I do too, especially because, you know, I mean, most of the content that I saw on their website seemed to be skewed to entertainment and celebrity, and I wonder whether, I mean, where's the kind of hard news and the civic consciousness that we wanna you know, educate our young ones about?
Well, maybe, you know, with political news, as a it also produces a kind of somewhat divisive feeling, you know, people. The thing about a lot of the political portals is that they tend to attract one sort of person from the spectrum, right? So if you're on the, you seem to be on that side of the spectrum, you might lose other people. So maybe the more kind of politically neutral position is to avoid politics altogether.
Everybody loves entertainment news, so that's the catch-all.
Well, I mean... Yeah. Well, do they? I mean, do you?
A majority of people love entertainment news. Well, find out more about Rev Asia's digital strategy in 2017. I'll be discussing that on The Breakfast Grill at 8 o'clock. And after the grill, we take a look at Malaysian football and the crisis in the M-League. So three M-League teams, Selangor, Kelantan and Perlis, they are now facing the prospect of missing the upcoming football season because of this massive financial management crisis they're facing. In fact, we've seen the past few months, several top officials from these football associations have had to step down. So really quite a crisis. In fact, some commentators are calling this the Great Depression of Malaysian football.
Well, you know, that would just be the Great Depression, Malaysia football or otherwise, you know.
Malaysian football version.
Yeah, because, you know, we also had that report from the Financial Times confidential research team about not only predicting when the next general elections are going to be, but also taking a measure of sentiment in Malaysia. I think they researched over 1,000
respondents.
And, you know, kind of noting that political sentiment has deepened. I mean, the negativity has deepened over the the last year. So.
Yeah, so the couple elements or aspects to this survey that I wanted to talk about, because it's really quite interesting. Again, like you said, it was part of this survey of 1,000 respondents. It's the FT, the UK's Financial Times research team. They wrote a report on this. And okay, so let's break it down. First of all, they found that that the 14th general elections would likely be held in the third quarter of this year. And they also predicted that Prime Minister Najib Razak is on track to retain his position. Apparently, they also believe that the Election Commission's contested redelineation exercise will be completed by the end of the second quarter, and that this redelineation exercise and the divided opposition would mean the chances of a change in power are exceedingly low in Malaysia.
Yeah, they also, you know, if you go to their website, and it's ftconfidentialresearch.com, you know, they, under the header, Malaysian Consumers Start 2017 on Pessimistic Note, they kind of give a breakdown of, you know, kind of sentiment. But, you know, I guess being here, we can link that to a range of, you know, events and perhaps facts on the ground. We, of course, have the weakening ringgit. That probably dampens sentiment somewhat. I mean, we might be completely mistaken. I don't know how many of us understand precisely what is the cause of the ringgit's weakening. You know, we might attribute it to a range of things.
That's a good point, Sharad, because whenever you have, you know, coffee shop talk, or you make small talk with your Uber driver or your, you know, the guy who sells you your nasi lemak, when you talk about the ringgit, you say, oh, ringgit, oh, teruk. But then you don't ask, or you don't delve deeper into it. Well, do you understand, or do you know why what do you think is causing the ringgit to fall?
Yeah, I think a lot of Malaysians probably, have a good sense of why things have tanked for the ringgit, but maybe not as an economist might. I mean, they might have the nuances there.
Well, it's funny, but most of them seem to say, oh, it's like that last time, 1998, last time. And, you know, that's the first thing they go is straight back to the Asian financial crisis times, right, where we pegged the ringgit to the dollar. So I think it was it's interesting that's the correlation that people make in their
heads. Yeah, so it's just a historical comparison. I mean, on Bloomberg yesterday, they were talking about the Malaysian ringgit, part of a larger discussion about emerging markets and, you know, and currencies and such. And so they use the expression canary in a coal mine, mm-hmm, when talking about the Malaysian ringgit, meaning, you know, was this a signal that, meaning the ringgit was the canary. Canaries
so
being,
what does that phrase mean, well, canary in a coal mine?
So this was a practice, I think, in some countries where there is mining. Canaries are brought in together with the miners. The canaries, being quite sensitive to toxins in the air, would respond to, say, perhaps a potential gas. There might be gas, underground gas, right, accumulation of gas at some points, which might be toxic to the miners. But the canaries would feel it first. And so the canaries would die or collapse or whatever. So this is your first indicator that something, that there's danger
it's
ahead.
Like a barometer of
that's
danger.
Right. So, okay, you know, is the Malaysian ringgit a barometer of, of worse things to come, I think? Also.
Well, just some numbers here. The ringgit hit a record low of a record low of 4.5002 against the US dollar. This is the worst it's been since the 1998 Asian financial crisis. Looking at Bloomberg, again, the ringgit crossed that 4 ringgit 50 psychological mark at 11:20 a.m. And the exchange rate provided by Bank Negara showed selling price of 1 US dollar to 4 ringgit 50 cents as of noon. So I guess the idea of, you know, 450 being the psychological level, most currency analysts say that once you hit that, the decline could be quite rapid. But again, other people say, well, psychological level, the reason why it's called a psychological level, because it's in your head, you know, it's just a psychological level. But again, that's how markets work, right? It's collective psychological thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. So you have, you know, herd mentality. And you have, the question is, how do you restore confidence, not just in the ringgit, but in the economy as a whole, questions of political leadership and such. And so what's interesting is that despite the pessimism that is suggested in the results of their survey, they also note that political changes are not afoot, and that, you know, this is not going to translate into a defeat for the Barisan Nasional and, you know, the ruling, which is the ruling coalition. So that's also a really interesting conundrum. Is that because the electoral system is structured in such a way that it dampens any anti-establishment dynamic? You know, in fact, you have to have a huge swing against, in order for that to translate into change of government?
Well, it's, for one thing, as the FT survey pointed out, it's the redelineation exercise and also the fracture in the opposition. So the opposition in not a non-cohesive opposition is going to contribute to a win for the ruling party, according to FT predictions.
Yeah, well, but you know, a week is a long time in politics. So
is a long time in politics. Yeah,
and so we're looking at third quarter. If that pans out, you're talking about 9 months. A lot can happen in 9 months. So
it's funny you say that, because sometimes I feel like nothing changes in politics. The same things I'm talking about today, the same things I spoke about many, many years ago. So it just keeps rolling on, the same problems.
Yeah, well, you know, then you can go further back if you talk about philosophy and some of the basic questions.
Exactly.
But it many, is true. I think Malaysians may be hoping for a real game changer, have been disappointed these last decade and a half. Over that, some serious problems remain.
Well, let's move on to other news that came out yesterday. Late last night, the Malaysian Anti-Corruption Commission seized and confiscated cash and gold bars worth around 3 million ringgit after they arrested the Secretary General of a federal ministry for alleged corruption. They've now come up to confirm that the person arrested is from the Rural and Regional Development Ministry.
So did you say gold bars?
Gold bars. Gold bars.
Well, that's a new low for Malaysians, isn't it? I understand the cash, the gold bars, but that's, again, it's a hedge against a volatile currency.
Well,
isn't it?
You know, I feel, yeah, exactly. That's a very good point. Hedge against the weakening ringgit.
So, you know. This
I don't
is one
to,
clever.
I don't mean to laugh about this, but you know, sometimes
one
just
clever civil servant. That one.
There you go. Probably listening to financial analysis elsewhere. Okay, let's take a look at other news elsewhere around the world. The UAE has now outlawed the keeping of wild animals like lions or tigers as pets. So, for some of the oil-rich Gulf state, owning the likes of a cheetah is a status symbol. But now, if you do so, you will risk jail time or a fine. Apparently, there have been some big cats pictured being taken on walks on social media. So take your pet tiger for a walk and take a selfie while you're at it.
I think it would be extraordinarily cool. I think a big animal in the house would be really nice.
Really?
No, I mean, I'm kidding. I mean, the upkeep for such an animal would be crazy. And of course, they might maul you at some point in time.
But I can understand how this is a status symbol. Apparently, there have been photos in the past gone viral on social media. A video emerged in October showing 5 tigers on a beach in Dubai. Poor tigers.
All right.
Okay, there you go. Coming up to 6:15 now, we'll be back with more news, including some New Year's resolutions for you. So stay with us on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Getting Better by the Beatles. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris with Sharad Kutin. It's now 6:20. Are things getting better? Well, we're going to ask you on Twitter. We've got a Twitter poll out there, out on our feed. tweet. Now you can follow us at BFM Radio. That's our handle. The hashtag is Tell BFM. Deepening pessimism. Are you pessimistic about good governance in Malaysia? This is following on the Financial Times research.
That's right. So the FT's Confidential Research Division has come out with a report on Malaysia, and so we're just kind of tagging that. Do you agree with them? They also make predictions about when the next general elections are going to be held. It's something that a lot of Malaysians do, at least a lot of Malaysians I sit with.
Well, that's curious because I wonder whether that's part of their research arm that they've done, you know, their own independent research on this, or was that part of the questions they asked the 1,000 respondents. So if you were to ask 1,000 Malaysians and say, hey, when do you think elections are going to be next year? I mean, you'd have multiple kind of answers. So maybe could this be accurate?
Well, I don't know. I from what I can tell, it's not. It's separate from the survey on sentiment. But I'd have to check that, Melissa.
Okay.
The thing about the guessing game is that I think Malaysians have become quite savvy about the parameters. It's not simply like, oh, when I think. They know that, oh, it's going to have to be held during a school holiday.
So then you
know where the school holidays are. Mm. Then you think, well, if a school holiday and say something like the Ramadan month coincides, then it's unlikely to be held during the fasting month. And then it's a process of elimination more than anything else that kind of gives you the end result.
But would you also be looking for indicators like, you know, just watching the headlines, you know, you can kind of see some headlines will be indicators of perhaps elections are around the corner. You might see more populist remarks in the headlines, measures, in fact.
Yeah, yeah. So the BRIM, you know, handout is often seen as an indicator of trying to sweeten the ground. Though I think in the past we've had surveys that suggest that the BRIM effect, the positive effect for the ruling party coalition is limited. It doesn't last that long. There's a bumper. It's a small bump and it doesn't last too long. So BRIM is not a magic wand. It's only one of many things that could happen that might sweeten the ground for the incumbent. And this is really about the politics of incumbency, and we have that in many countries, including the US, right? The power of incumbency. And so all those things. And I think that's why people can talk endlessly and at length about something like when the next general elections are going to be held.
Okay, well, since it is the start of the new year, we thought we'd start with a look at resolutions. It is the time for New Year's resolutions, but really, how many of us keep them? Because essentially, it's that perennial battle between good intentions and putting things off. So for instance, you know, you've got good intentions to lose weight. So you go to the gym and within a month, you tail off and the gym membership becomes just a dusty card at the back of your wallet. Do you know they did a survey? Planet Money, I think, or NPR, commissioned an economist to take a look at when exactly gym memberships taper off. So they came up with an actual date to see what day it was that gym attendance fell, which coincided with a spike in attendance to fast food restaurants. So that was what they considered the mark, the death of your New Year's resolution.
Yeah, well, you know.
And do you know what then that date was?
What?
Mid-February.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Oh, dear. Well, you know, I don't have any resolutions regarding my weight. Though I think I should have.
Have you never made a resolution?
Of course I have.
I'm going to lose 5 kilos this year.
I'm just so embarrassed about it. You know,
I never keep it.
But, you know, because I think that, you know, at some point, actually a friend of mine said to me, you know, Sharad, I think you just like you like being on those things. I mean, you know, like the radical weight loss thing. So it's fun for a while and then doing it gives you a real buzz because you feel a sense of control over yourself. And then once you've achieved it, it's like, okay, it's now time to binge again and just go back to my normal self. So, you know, it's not that I'm looking for real transformation. I'm just looking for the buzz that comes from you know, occasional attempts, occasional successes over myself.
Right.
So that's what I'm, you know, looking at. In fact, you know, if you tune into Night School, we talk about this curious phenomena that, you know, the French psychoanalyst, you know, Jacques Lacan described as jouissance. And you, so the, you know, it's this really weird thing. Anyway,
jouissance?
Yeah, jouissance.
Oh, jouissance?
Jouissance. Yeah, with a J. Anyway, we have two votes that come in. So there you have it. But we have, okay, so what do you do with the situation of procrastination? And in fact, it's quite interesting because there's research being done on this. In fact, there is a university that has a cluster called the Procrastination Research Group.
Awesome.
And it calls it the biggest problem in education today. Apparently, it's not just students, but academics themselves that have that display this problem in some intensity. It says there, procrastination is more common among people who are impulsive, prone to perfectionism, burdened by other people's expectations of them, and scared of failure. And that sounds so familiar, doesn't it? Okay, so what can be done? Let's not dwell on the negative. Let's focus on what can be done.
Can I just add to one thing? Mm. Sometimes procrastination is not about all those things that you talked about, characteristics of the person. Sometimes it's just completely overwhelmed by the sheer amount of work that you have to do, and you become paralyzed with that, you know.
Yeah, that's true. But then, okay, so then you might not want to call it procrastination. So a procrastinator.
Yeah, what is a procrastinator?
So somebody who puts off what can be done. So if you're overworked and you have too much work, then of course that's just a question of managing your workload, and of course there are only 24 hours in a day. So if you're working and can't get to this other task in time, I don't think you can call that procrastination.
Can I add another issue under procrastination? One of the biggest reasons for procrastination in this day and age is Netflix or stream TV, TV on demand, video on demand.
Well, so
that is procrastinate. That's the real core of procrastination today, Sharad.
So that's actually, and I think they mentioned this in the article too, it's really the symptom, not the cause.
Uh-huh.
So when you faced with this onerous choice, on one hand, work, and the other, a pleasure like Netflix and watching something on television, chances are you're going to go for the pleasure rather than the pain, right? So yeah, it's kind of a no-brainer on that level. And of course, there's so many distractions, but it is the procrastinator's choice, right? You can say, I'm going to get to that Netflix movie after I've completed the work. And so the person who rewards themselves, having done the work, as opposed to somebody who rewards themselves, who reward themselves before they get the work done. And I think that's the dividing line. And I'm clearly in the latter category. I'm definitely one who goes for... My mother, who's a teacher, would tell me, and this would be the procrastination around marking exam scripts.
Scripts, yeah.
Or just, essays. And she would set herself a task. She'd say, okay, I'm going to mark 10 scripts, do something pleasurable. And it would be something simple like, taking a walk or making yourself a cup of coffee, and then she'd get back to the next 10 scripts and so on and so forth. I found that a very valuable way of, approaching what I think is literally hell on earth, marking essays. Yeah,
it helps me to have a timeline because I am a huge procrastinator. But I'll give myself a timeline. I'll work on this until 2 o'clock, and then I won't touch it anymore. I won't look at it anymore, and then that would be my reward for the day that I'm done until 2. So I give myself time markers.
Right.
Okay, well, tell us how you get over that procrastination bump. We're on Twitter. You can follow us at BFM Radio, and you can take our Twitter poll as we ask you if you're pessimistic about good governance in Malaysia following the findings of the Financial Times research survey. All right, it's coming up to 6:30. We've got the first news bulletin of the day with Lynn Mark on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. It's coming up to 6:40. I'm Melissa Idris. I've got Sharad Kutan and Billy Joel in the studio with me. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, we have the sounds of
Sounds of Billy Joel. That was You May Be Right. And what do you think? Do you think we are on the right track as a country? We've got a Twitter poll going following the FT Confidential Research findings that most Malaysians are quite pessimistic about the direction of the country. So tell us if you're pessimistic about good governance in Malaysia. We've got a Twitter poll going. Samuel Tan has weighed in. He's weighed in, but on another topic. I'll come back to that. Tulun Sokit has weighed in to say that due to rising costs, the light at the end of the tunnel has been switched off indefinitely. So he's very pessimistic indeed. And just to come back to Samuel, who commented on our previous discussion, Sharad, about procrastination. Samuel reckons, go for a walk or a run or do house chores or work. So I think the house chores would make me, that would be the cause of my procrastination, Samuel.
Okay. I think that we can make a distinction between the direction the country is taking, or whether, you know, it's a question of the economy or politics or whatever, and our own personal trajectories. And, you know, you might actually be very optimistic about your prospects for the year, despite the general situation, even, you know, with the weakening ringgit. So
really, you don't think you can divorce? I don't know whether I can divorce it. If I feel pessimistic about the direction of the country and the economy in general, that will impact my own personal economy, and that would cause me to feel pessimistic about my future.
Yeah, but you know, we all have different circumstances and different resources. Perhaps, you know, some of us can manage the difficult situation, you know, despite, say, like the high rising costs of living. You know, I understand when I talk to just, you know, like taxi drivers, and they tell me about, you know, the school year is just open, because we've got quite a few stories in the mainstream media about, you know, the rising costs of the school year. I mean, the start of the school year. What
getting
parents,
ready for school?
Yeah,
school
and you know, that's I can imagine that as a major burden, because it's got to do with your children and, you know, what and things that you can't avoid. You know, what might happen with the very poor is that that might be a category that's growing, but they might opt out of school, and that would be really tragic for the country. So I think already suggestions are out there about this possibility, and the question is, who's tracking this? Are kids from a working class families dropping out of school because of the high cost, you know, of things like books and shoes and uniforms and whatever it is that you need to put together? That's just become quite a burden for people. So that I understand all that, but you know, I mean, still some of us might not feel so pessimistic. Might have some positive plans for the future. It might include, you know, leaving the country and working abroad. I mean, maybe that's a strategy, and that might keep you positive. You might be thinking, ah, there are opportunities overseas. Or there might be opportunities locally. I mean, there might be something that you can do that might turn around your personal situation this year. So
okay, well, there you go. That, I guess, it depends on the person at the end of the day. Tell us what you think, whether you feel a deepening pessimism. Again, we've got a Twitter poll going. Follow us at BFM Radio. Okay, let's take a quick look at resolutions against, as the first few days of the year, we're all making resolutions. Well, some of us. Yeah. Do you have a resolution at the moment?
I think I should have had one before the start of the year.
My last year's resolution was to call my mum every day. And my mum will tell you that I did not fulfill my resolution last year.
Every day?
Every day, just to check in to say hi.
Oh, yeah, that's very sweet.
But I didn't do that, of course. But this year's resolution, let's opt for something a bit simpler. I hope to have better posture this year, because I sit like a hunchback. So because we're in front of our computers every day, so perhaps sitting better would remind you. So sit up straight if you're sitting in the car right now.
Yeah. So now we're going to be looking at a story about a billionaire and his life and resolutions, as if this is a reflection of any of us and how we live our lives. Mark Zuckerberg. There he is. He's announced plans to spend 2017 touring the U.S. Why? Why?
My resolution doesn't compare to his resolution. Well, okay, now, his, what is my resolution compared to his?
His previous resolutions included running 365 miles.
That's 1 mile a day.
That's 1 mile a day. Okay. Reading 25 books, which is quite modest. That means a book every 2 weeks.
Okay.
More or less, right? One book every 2 weeks. And learning Mandarin. And I know on the Mandarin score, and it's been said about, you know, picking up a new language, that that he's actually done quite well, because he had a meeting with the Chinese president, Xi Jinping, and he actually had that whole conversation with Xi Jinping in Mandarin.
Wow.
I mean, I don't know how good his Mandarin is. Is it, you know, is it inflected with, you know, allusions to Chinese classical texts, or, you know, is it rich idiomatically or whatever? But anyway, he carried through this conversation, which is quite something, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, his wife, I don't know if his wife is a Mandarin speaker. I know she's ethnic Chinese, but I'm not quite sure if she's a Mandarin speaker, because that's what you call a sleeping dictionary. That is really helpful when you're trying to learn a language.
That is true. Okay, but coming back to his 2017 resolutions, touring the US, do you know whether this is business related at all? I mean, is he touring the US a la Facebook popularity tour, like to spread the word of Facebook, the gospel of Facebook, or is this
that
just
would be extraordinarily analog? I think you don't need that. I mean,
it's the internet, right? You can spread.
Yeah, and I think Facebook's so big already.
But is this more a tourism thing?
No, I don't know. Actually, I couldn't tell from the story what the real purpose is. There's some speculation about why he's doing this, including that he might think. He might be considering a run for the presidency of the United States. So, I mean, he's very young, right? He's like in his
30s.
In his 30s, right? Mm-hmm. So, okay, so there he has this. Perhaps it's getting a measure of a country. I mean, I don't know how many of us think this is important, that when we speak with a sense of what the full reality is. I mean, how many of us have visited every state in the Federation?
I was actually just counting that during the Billy Joel song. I was thinking, have I gone to every state in Malaysia? And I have. I've gone to every state. But I don't think I've visited outside little cities within the state. So again, you know, if you go, you'd want to not just limit yourselves to the urban areas. You want to go out of your comfort zone as well.
Yeah,
right?
But that's difficult, right? It becomes almost a full-time job. I mean, the idea is
But isn't that lovely, the idea of just touring Malaysia? I remember reading a book by a Singaporean author when he cycled across Malaysia. Do you remember his
name?
Yeah, you know who I'm talking about.
Yes, I do. Something Vardaketh, and it's like On a Breeze or something, isn't
correct,
it?
Correct.
And he was at the Georgetown Literary Festival, is it Sudip Vardaketh?
I will come back to you.
Okay. So, but more importantly,
Sudhir Vardaketh.
Sudhir Vardaketh. Well, not very good. I got it wrong.
Almost there.
Okay, I got one and a half parts of his name right. So, I think why I was interested in this is not just because Mark Zuckerberg is, a kind of thought leader, and you know, when I looked at his resolutions, I thought, well, that's something I could do. I mean, running a mile a day wouldn't be so bad. I mean, it'd certainly be very good for me. Reading 25 books, that would be a challenge. I find myself reading a lot of magazine articles, long-form magazine articles, and, you know. But books, that's a real commitment. And, right. You know, I feel I'm missing out. So I buy books, and they're kind of starting to pile up in a kind of obscene way because I'm not catching up with the reading, you know, fast enough. And so, you know, that would be really good to do. Ever thought of learning a new language, Melissa?
No, because I know that I just wouldn't have the time commitment to do it.
But if you had the time, was that something you would want to
do? If I had the time, I would rather read the 25 books and go on the 365-mile run. Well, not at the same time, not consecutively, but, you know, a mile a day.
Yeah. Okay.
So I don't know, the language thing, I think, I'm still struggling to speak English, so I think I'll focus on that.
Oh, Melissa, you're far too modest. I mean, you know, you already have, what, two languages?
Just two.
Two languages, like me. And, you know, I think almost effect. I mean, at the one point, I think I was effectively monolingual. I was just an English speaker. My Malay has improved slightly. But I think learning a new language is really good because I think it changes your brain.
I think learning Mandarin is important, I think. You know, language of the future, shall we say. But quite interesting. I would love to tour the US simply because, you know, there's just so many, you can get so many different types of landscapes and geographical areas just within the one country, the one United States, as opposed to, you know, if you wanted the snowy winter.
Well, yeah, you know, in this region, there are countries with extraordinary
in
changes.
In this region,
yeah. Yeah, in this region, if you were in Myanmar, you would go from Himalayan snow-capped mountains in the north to verdant tropical jungles in the south, in, you know, around Moulmein. And so you have Kachin State, which has the Himalayas, and then the south. And, you know, you have Indonesia has
yes, right.
such, a, you know, because it spans, in fact, two major environmental cleft in the, you know, in the environment, right? I mean, in ecology, so you have the kind of Asiatic shelf, and then you have the Melanesian Pacific shelf. So lots of countries to explore, at least in the region.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Here is Real World by Matchbox 20 as you explore the real world in 2017. Stay with us on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.